you are made to do big things, and don't get in your head over it. And if you want to be in that room to learn from them, if you want to surround yourself by those people, put yourself out there and do it.
Hey folks, this is Abe Shreve. Welcome to the Choose Difficult podcast. The path to success is not easy, and here we explore the stories of those who choose difficult and change the world they live in. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to a remarkable woman who lives in the DC metro area. Her name is Sarah Reynolds Aji, and last year, her little real estate business sold just under 1,100 homes. Now, for those that understand that industry, that was $493 million in inventory sold. That is a really big business. She is one of the largest, most successful real estate teams in the entire industry, and she is really fun. Now, every now and then, I will hear someone look at someone like Sarah, and they will say something like, well, I could do that if I had a big company. And that is said by people that have never gone through the pain of hiring people and learning how to lead them. Sarah grew up as a PK. She explained to me that that's a pastor's kid. Her father was called into the ministry. And from a very young age, she learned how to speak to adults, and she learned how to work, and she learned how important it was to make a contribution in the lives of others. In fact, she got her work ethic young, and she started working young.
I started working when I was 14 years old. I love to work, and I took lots of classes, and then every day I would leave the classes and go immediately to my job, and then at 9:30 I would do all my homework, and next morning wake up and do it again. My parents taught me good hard work. The Bible has a lot of verses about working hard and doing our best and giving it our all. And so I was built, I grew up with that as like sort of the foundation of, you know, work matters and every work matters. So like a lot of people think, you know, a pastor is called into ministry. You know, I always say like, I'm as called into my job as my dad is called into ministry. I do view it as a calling. And so whatever you do, you want to take it seriously. And so I think it might be my significant strength. Like I always want to feel like I'm making a difference and being significant in the world. But I've always loved working.
Sarah met her husband when she was a sophomore in college. They were both attending Liberty University. She was getting a degree in business management. And as is a pattern in her life, she found her way to leadership. She was the prayer leader for her dorm, and they would hold these brother-sister activities that were often well attended by the international students because that was how they would meet people.
I had to go because I was on leadership, and he was there because international students don't have anywhere to go. And so we played volleyball together. He was on the opposing team, and we started becoming friends like right after that, and were friends for a really long time and got married 5 years later. We dated for 5 years. He didn't tell me he loved me until he asked me to marry him, which was 4.5 years after we started dating. So I was the first one to express, to say those words. And his opinion is that Americans use those words a lot and use them out of meaning, and that they're very serious words. And he just said that the only person that will ever hear those words is my wife. So he just like told me from the beginning, like, I'm not going to say that until I'm ready to ask my wife to marry me. And so 2 years in, I was like telling him, I love you. And he just, thank you. It was awful. It was awful. But then that night that he whispered in my ear, we were on a walk and he said, I love you. And I knew right then he's about to ask me to marry him. He was supposed to be a doctor. And that was why his parents sent him here to become a doctor and then probably go back to Nigeria and do that there. And he went, so he had a pre-med degree. We ended up getting married. The plan was for me to sell real estate while he goes to medical school. And he was working for 5 doctors at the time as like a medical assistant. And he came home one day and was like, so I decided I don't want to be them. I was like, don't want to be, well, what do you want to be? And he's like, I don't know. And so we went on a journey of discovering that together. And I wanted a loan officer I trusted, right? With like handing my clients to that I knew that they would do what's best for them. And I trusted their integrity. And so in 2011, he got his mortgage license and has been doing it ever since. In 2013, we had Olivia. She's our 8-year-old. And we were married 4 years before that. So we had a good time. I like the way we did it in terms of like, now that I know what kids are, like how much kids impact your relationship and stuff. I appreciate that we had 4 years together without them. Yeah. So we have Olivia in 2013. We had Caitlin in 2015. And then in 2019, we had Lincoln.
Sarah found her way into the real estate business when she joined her mother's real estate team. Her mother had a successful real estate business and thought that if Sarah were to come and join her, they could do even more. And they did.
I joined her business. And so she was helping about 30 to 40 families a year at the time. And we had 8 active listings. And we thought we were hot stuff because the board was full of 8 active listings. And there was one problem. They were all active, meaning nothing was selling. And it was scary. It was scary. We had an assistant. Nothing was moving. It was a scary time. We had to learn how to price correctly and learn how to problem solve and have really hard conversations with our clients. And the ones that listened ended up making really good money. And the ones that didn't ended up riding the market down and lost a lot.
The listings that she's referencing, for those that are unfamiliar, are people with homes that have asked Sarah and her mother to sell their home for them. You heard her say we had 8 listings, but none were selling. And this skill of helping a seller price their home correctly may be the most important skill that a realtor has, because oftentimes a seller will feel like, well, I need this much out of my house. And the truth is, sellers don't determine what their house is worth. The buying community does. It's those that say, I'm willing to give you that much money for your home. It's a really difficult conversation. And it can be very stressful when you have homes that people have asked you to sell and they're not selling. And Sarah almost walked away from the business. She actually wasn't enjoying it.
So in 2009, I was going to quit real estate. I didn't love it, to be honest. And I sat my mom down. I had joined her originally to help her because she had had back surgery and couldn't show houses. And so I had joined her to like be her buyer's agent to help her. So 2009, she was doing great. And I was like, this isn't for me. I'm going to go back into retail because I had lots of job offers there and I enjoyed it. And so she said, I really think we need to look at you leading and growing the business and the team. And I studied business and I've always loved business. So we made the switch that she said she wants me to be in charge of building the team out, which was really weird because she's the mom who had done it for 20 years. And she was saying that she feels like God has gifted me with business and leadership skills and that she thought it would be smart to sort of have me sort of take this to the next level. And so we made that decision in 2009. I read this amazing red book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And I followed the model of what was sort of a proven track record of real estate businesses that have done well. And so I started implementing one system at a time from The Millionaire Real Estate Agent book.
This book that she's referencing, this red book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, was authored by Gary Keller, Jay Papasan, and Dave Jenks. And what Gary wanted to do was teach real estate people how to be business people. Not just how to create sales, but actually how to run your real estate business like a business. And you heard Sarah say that they started to implement one system at a time. That's important because it's hard. Because you are already running a business. And you're not really able to just stop everything and rebuild it all the systems at once. You have to keep running a business and you add a system at a time. And what Gary and Jay and Dave did in their book is they made that a very systematic process. It's funny because last year I heard someone say, is that book still relevant? Well, ask Sarah. Using the systems and models she learned in that book, they sold just under 1,100 homes. I'd say it's still relevant. And so she started to really implement and engage with these models and follow these models and systematize her business. And now it's time to really start adding talent to the team.
In 2011, I hired my first buyer's agent. We had started having an overflow of business. So I was, both my mom and I were working listings and buyers, and we had an overflow. And so we hired through the overflow. And we hired a girl named Sasha, who is amazing. And I had no training program or nothing. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just said, follow me around, and taught her real estate. And so she was licensed for a year and a half and had sold one house before joining my team. And when she joined, she was very successful right away. And she was struggling financially when she first joined. And then when, after she started having some success, I said, you got to schedule a vacation. So she was on vacation and she sent me a text message and she said, you know, before I joined you, I was struggling. I was having a really hard time. And now I'm on vacation that I paid for my entire family. And if it weren't for you, that wouldn't be possible. And I bring that up because that's like the day that I became addicted to team building. Like, I'm talking addicted, of impacting people's lives and making their life better and helping. And honestly, that they just turn around and make my life better through it. But that was the moment that I realized this is why I'm on this planet.
I hope you caught that. Pay close attention to what Sarah just said, because she just announced that she is addicted to team building, to finding great people and creating opportunity for them. And here is the great secret of business. That's what business building is. It's succeeding through others. And it's hard, because oftentimes we get into the business that we're in because we're good at a certain thing. But if we're good at that, we're going to start growing, and there's going to be a point that we have to have help. And the greats learn how to succeed through others. The challenge is we can get people in place, but we are so used to running 1,000 miles an hour, we don't often understand the toll it's taking on us. And Sarah explained to us that it was wisdom given to her by her husband that helped her understand how to adjust the pace of her life.
My husband was reading the book Leaders That Last, and I have been through the growth from 2018 to this year, we're up 4 times. And he sat me down and he said, you know, he saw me that I was basically at my breaking point almost every evening. It was like time and time again. And he sat me down and he said, I'm reading the book Leaders That Last. And in the book, it talks about how in a growing organization, you have to be constantly redoing your job description. And he's like, I was thinking, and you haven't redefined your job in 4 years, and you've done 4 times, like your business has quadrupled. And that's why you're overwhelmed. And he just said, you're not going to last. If you keep at this pace, you're not going to last. This will break you. And what happened is I ended up becoming sort of the leader in the ivory tower over the last year on accident, because I was so busy and I had so much of my head down, and I had 19 people answering to me. So I'd go from one one-on-one to the another, to another meeting. And so it was a good conversation, but that was the lesson I learned was, A, if your business is growing, make sure to be redefining your role and looking at what leverage you need at that point to make sure that you don't burn out, to make sure that you do last. And then the other lesson is, don't take away the ability to like work within your strengths. I'm a very people relational leader, like extremely, and I can lead very well when I know my people. And what ended up happening is going from meeting after meeting after meeting, one-on-one after one-on-one, what ended up happening was I wasn't out with the people. And my dad called me actually. And he was like, he said, there's been something on my heart that I want to talk to you about. And so I asked your mom to pull up your calendar to see when you could go to lunch. And he said, I can't go to lunch with my daughter for 4 weeks. That's how blocked you are right now. He was like, what is going on? And it was like, oh, like you have to have time for the things that matter most. And leadership can be super lonely. And if you don't make the time for those things and make the time, the things that feed you joy. And for me, being with my people is what really fills me up.
Sarah has discovered that through her success, she has very beautifully crafted a set of golden handcuffs that really is keeping her from the things that she loves most. It's a trap for many of us. And the way out of those handcuffs can be really, really hard. I have to share a personal story right here. And it's a little hard for me. But I had launched this business, you know, with my partner, Gary Keller. And I had been working on it about a year. And we were achieving some success. And I was in a meeting with Gary and a few other people. And we were profitable. We were doing well. And in my memory, and maybe it wasn't exactly like this, but in my memory, Gary looked at me and he said, and he did say these words, you running that company scares the hell out of me. And for a minute, I looked around like, is he talking to me? And he was talking to me. And then he went on to explain that it was now time for me to find the right person to come in and run the day to day. so that I could continue working on the area of the business that was most suited for my gifts and the company could continue to grow. And it ended up being amazing counsel. I hired a wonderful president, and he was right. I am much happier now having somebody else run that part of it. But there was this little season while I was looking for that person and processing what one of my heroes in business has said to me. There was this little season where I felt like I kind of lost my identity. Am I not enough? Is he disappointed? Am I not doing well? What I learned is it's not about am I doing well or am I good. It's about we have a big mission. And now it's time to go find the right people to get in here and lead it forward. And the only way we're going to be successful at that is by finding people that are better in those roles than we are. And sometimes you feel a little lost.
My chief growth officer, who I hired to oversee a big part of our business, is doing a remarkable job. And I'm noticing that I'm like, jealous isn't the right word. I'm feeling like there was something wrong with me when I'm seeing certain things go a certain way, or that I failed my organization because he's doing such a phenomenal job that I'm like, I almost was like having a hard time like praising him because I was like, you can't be that good. And like, no, which is, I'm just being transparent here, but that's the truth. It, because I felt like I was failing as a leader. Like when I was seeing him shine, it made me feel like I was failing. The best thing a leader can do is like hire someone better than them and hire and surround themselves, which I have. It's just it's a big transition, right? Like, cause I'm giving him like my key people. And so it's like, there's a whole emotional side of that. That is part of this as well, that I think a lot of people don't want to talk about, but it's there.
There are those that are born leaders. They're natural born leaders, but like anything else, you can be born with the natural abilities to lead, but that doesn't mean you're good at the skill of leading. That has to be earned and acquired and practiced. And Sarah worked in her business for a long time, and she earned the opportunity to step back and let others take over parts of the business and lead. And I really appreciate that she's willing to share with us the emotional challenge of this. But this really is what a business is about. A business like Sarah's, at least, which is focused on the development of her people. She's gritty, but now she gets to give these opportunities to others and focus on the part that she enjoys the most.
I'm gritty, meaning I will do what I need to do, and I don't really complain much about it. I put my head down. I'll build systems. I will figure it out if that's what the business needs. And I've done that now for 15 years. And I'm ready to like live what I am more made to do. Like I put myself in a lot of roles because out of necessity. That is what the business needed at the time. And now we're to a point where I don't have to do that. So why am I continuing to do that? And so for me, it's like creating a job description where every single day I walk out and I said, did I work today? It doesn't feel like I worked it today. And that's what I want for work, but making sure that I get to travel with my family, like, you know, 1 to 2 months a year, and being a present in their mom. And I mean, I missed a lot of bedtimes when Olivia was under 4, and, you know, I don't want to miss bedtimes. And I've made that commitment, and just making sure that I'm able to be with my family, and just really running to what creates joy in me.
That sounds good, doesn't it? Travel for a month or two. Just do what brings you joy. Just be with your family. But I just want to remind you that Sarah has shared with us that work is her drug of choice. She has used the terms addicted. She has described that she is willing to put her head down and do anything. She has done this her whole life, this work ethic. And so while it sounds really nice to just step away and be off the clock and unwind, listen to me. It is hard for those that are wired for running. I asked Sarah, how do you do it? This is an area I struggle with myself, going home and being home. How do you do it?
The number one thing I do is I put my phone on the charger, which is in our mudroom, and I sit and have dinner without my phone. And that alone is a big deal. And it's hard. That's hard, which I sound like a crazy person, but making sure my phone is not even in reachable. We're so addicted to it. And so we're all like, you know, our brains just go right to picking it up and just having it put away, having it on a charger. All my notifications are off. So email notifications, text message notifications, Slack notifications. So I can control my time versus anyone in the world controlling my time, because that's what notifications are. And so those things, and then making sure I block, like Sundays, it's like all family. I start working at night after the kids go to bed. I plan out my week, but Sundays is church. Sundays is lunch with the family, focused on them. And then of course, most Saturdays, that's the case as well. I live in counterbalance right now. So Monday through Friday is a hard run. And then Saturday, Sunday, it's family time.
All right. Now let's just stop for just a moment. And I want you to think about this. Sarah's just revealed to us that she's addicted to her phone. Now be honest. Be honest with yourself. Are you? Here's a little test. Do you ever feel your phone buzz in your pocket and it's not in your pocket? You ever accuse someone of being on their phone in the bathroom, but sometime within a 24-hour period, you're on your phone in the bathroom? Don't tell anyone the answer to that question. Our phones are designed to pull us in. And really what Sarah's saying is, she is going to happen to her schedule. She's not going to let her schedule happen to her. It takes discipline. And this idea of I live in counterbalance, meaning I hard charge all week long, but I remove the temptation to be on the clock during the week. This is important to understand, because there are so many people that talk about this perfect work-life balance. We all live in this euphoric zone. And I'm just here to tell you, it doesn't exist. It's not all panda bears and kiwi fruit. These are long, hard days. And so we're going to stop someday no matter what. We may as well take the appropriate breaks along the way, which means we're going to have to raise some leaders. And that is the long game.
That's been a journey for me over the last couple of years, and I'm still actively on the journey. I have an amazing leadership team that runs our entire organization, and they're remarkable humans. And I've realized that I need to systematize leadership, which sounds very strange. But what I learned is there are certain things of how I've done something that I actually needed to get out of my brain and on paper to teach. Like, for example, I follow a whole model for seeking first to understand when a problem arises. And I noticed that a lot of my leaders, when they first started with me, they would jump to conclusions right away, jump to judgment right away, and not ask questions. And so now sitting them down and saying, this is how we handle when we suspect something potentially. First of all, we stay completely out of curiosity. We always assume best intent. These are the questions you ask, right? So that, like, systematizing the things and getting, many of us do things so natural, we don't realize it, that there's even something special to it. And so just having to, like, how did I handle that? Or how do I handle that? And teaching it on a regular basis. I mean, that's what I've been learning, is just teaching leadership principles that I've learned and telling the story of, you know, I learned it. I just told a story at our leadership meeting, you know, about the one I said earlier with, like, imposing what we want for them. We don't do that. We ask them what they want. We ask what 5 years from now, what would awesome look like, you know, and we're constantly asking those questions. But over time, you know, developing leaders, I was saying this to someone, I was like, I miss sometimes getting out there and selling real estate, because you get those wins, those instant wins, right? Developing leaders is like the longest wins, like with a lot of, like, loses in the middle. And so, yeah, it's systematizing it.
It's not uncommon to come across a leader that has hired people in their organization, and they probably hired them pretty entrepreneurially. They didn't use a behavioral assessment. They probably didn't have a written job description. And maybe there wasn't clarity of goals. But they get burned in one way or another. So the person doesn't work out, or else they feel like they just got them trained, and then that person left on their own and went and started a competing company. I mean, it is hard. And I love the way that Sarah describes it as the long game, with lots of losses, but big, big wins. Great companies understand that their company is their people. And then in addition to it, it's whatever else they sell or manufacture or produce. I asked Sarah, what are the qualities of a great leader?
I think the greatest leaders can be hard-headed. And so what can happen sometimes is, like, you're teaching them, but they don't care what you said. Like, not they don't care, but they want to learn it themselves, and it will speak to them more by learning it themselves. And so like teach, like letting people fail, because that, you know, that in the long run, you know, I had a conversation with my amazing chief growth officer, who has just been amazing. And he said to me, we have to let this leader fail. And I looked at him and I say, you're telling me right now that the results of third quarter don't matter. I was like, cause I can fix this right now. And I will make it happen, and we will hit our goal third quarter, cause I'm going to fix it. And he looked at me and he said, I'm asking you not to. And I was like, okay. And he goes, because I care about us hitting the goal 5 years from now. And he was like, and you have a pattern of jumping in and fixing it for everyone. And meanwhile, they're not learning. And this is why you're burnt out, because you're jumping in. And he's like, we have to let them fail. And if they don't rise up, they're not meant to be here.
That is brilliant. Write that down. We have to let them fail. And if they don't rise up, they are not meant to be here. Now, it is not lost on me that this is someone who reports to Sarah. This is one of her executive team members. And I don't know whether or not Sarah actually consciously thought about this when she shared this with me, but what she has displayed in this story is that she has created an environment and leaders that are given the opportunity to own the results of this company and to care about the mission just as much as her, and to push back on the owner of the business. She's not surrounding herself with people that will just do whatever she says. This may be the most important thing, I think, that she shared with us, is this story about how one of her leaders said to her, please don't do that. Please, they have to grow. I'm interested in not just hitting this year's goal, but to hit it in 5 years. And to me, I think this is a great example of Sarah's commitment to surround herself with people that will push her forward, that will push back when they disagree with her, and they can do it and she can receive it because she knows their heart, their intent, and their commitment. She surrounded herself with people that care.
Putting myself around people that will speak life into me and will point things out and will tell me, like, you know, you're made for greatness and believe in that and speak up. You have a lot of amazing things to share, and just making sure I'm around people that want to amplify who I am and see who I am, not in judgment, you know, because I do run different than the grain, I would say. And so those that like love that, you know, and say like, speak up, you know, we need those to speak up. And so, especially the young mamas, there's not a lot of young moms that lead businesses like mine.
I really am drawn to Sarah's authenticity and her vulnerability. And even in this interview, she has not shied away at all from sharing what her challenges are.
I struggle a lot with imposter syndrome, and like, you were made to do big things, and don't get in your head over it. And if you want to be in that room to learn from them, if you want to surround yourself by those people, put yourself out there and do it.
Business growth and leadership is vulnerable. You're going to live in vulnerability. And for some of us, that feels like we're a little out of control, right? We don't want people to know that we don't have all the answers. We want to look like the smartest people in the room. And you will get what you want. If you want to be the smartest person in the room, you're going to be in a room that'll allow you to be the smartest. But people like Sarah look for the next room of growth. How do I get around others that are where I want to be so I can start learning from them? And then when she's where they want to be, what's the next room? That's a great question to ask yourself. What's the next room? Sarah is full of incredible lessons. I asked her, what are some of the lessons that you've learned as a leader? And she shared with me one of the early lessons that she learned that was associated with Sasha. Remember, we referenced her early in the podcast.
I was having a goal setting meeting with her, and I was telling her what her goals were for the year. And she looked at me and she said, I think you think I want what you want for my life. And she was like, I would love to talk to you about what I want for my life and what I want my goal to be. And it would hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was like, oh my goodness, like that, I should be asking all of my people what they want. And I was before. So that was the first big leadership lesson, was like, okay, my job is not to tell them what to do. My job is to ask them questions about what they want for out of their life and be a way for them to get that. Another one was vision casting. That didn't come natural for me. Like there are some leaders that I think are very natural, like casting the vision. And I struggle at times with fear of disappointment. And so I was keeping the vision a secret in my head because I thought if I shared it and we didn't hit it, then I thought that I would be letting everyone down. And I realized that when you don't cast the vision, then you're going to lose your people because you've got to get it out of your head and you need to put it on paper and you need to share with them and they will actually help you do it. So when I got out of my comfort zone and I shared, this is what the future of our company is going to be. This is what the future of our organization is going to be. This is the opportunity that's going to come from this vision. When I did that, they pushed me harder and I pushed them harder to get there. And that was a huge lesson for me on that.
Sarah is an example of one who throws water on the mythical fire that you can't have a big business and have close relationships. That you have to be head down working every second of every day and that you're going to sacrifice your relationships, but you can make them up later. She doesn't do this. I love how she talked about the states of counterbalance, focusing during the week, being ever present during the weekend, and doing things to make sure that she is putting her phone away at dinner time. I really enjoyed hearing how Sarah learned that sometimes you're going to feel a little lost when you replace yourself in certain roles with people that are better than you in those roles. It's okay to feel a little lost. And the emphasis of surrounding herself with great people and then setting the table for an environment where it's encouraged for them to give their opinions, to push back and to share their wisdom and to help lead their leader. I found Sarah extremely authentic. I found her to be a humble leader, someone who's committed to the experience of those they serve and everyone in her company, and she has multiple companies. I hope you learned as much as I did from Sarah. She is amazing. Well, there you have it, folks. If you're a business leader and you'd like to know what hiring a coach would look like for you and for your organization, head over to mymapscoach.com and let's set up a meeting. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us an honest review. It really helps us in our mission to help others. And certainly there's someone in your life that could benefit from hearing this episode. Please share it with them. I hope you've enjoyed our time together, and I hope you'll join us next time as we continue to explore the stories of extraordinary individuals who choose difficult.